come today and defying all odds, Baruch Hashem, for Torah and of course good food. thank you so much for coming. So, and also thank you to Shalitz. Where's Rovin? And thank you for having us. I have to say it every week, and I actually forgot one week, and I was reminded. But it's really a pleasure for us to be able to come and for the restaurant to open up their doors to us on a weekly basis. And you know, we have a lot of hakaras hatov for Shalitz. So thank you very much. The speaker today is Rabbi Rand. Rabbi Rand really needs no introduction, but I'll introduce him briefly. Rabbi Rand's been a Rebbe in our high school for over 25 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was also my physics teacher. And he's, as well as he's the editor of Likutei Pshatim and many other Sfarim, and recently published Sefer L'Chaim, and also Daf Yomi Digest, and all around Baruch Hashem, amazing Rebbe in our yeshiva, and a huge Talmid Chacham. Okay. So we're very happy to be able to have Rabbi Rand. Topic today is formula for fulfillment, preparation for Rosh Hashanah, and I'm going to let Rabbi Rand tell you more about that. So you should go without any further.
Okay, good afternoon. Thank you, Josh. Thank you. It's good to see everybody. I also was impressed. Got caught by the rain a little bit. Actually, I'm happy about it because I have to water my lawn today, hopefully. But it does indicate a special effort on all of your parts. I appreciate it. It's good. It's very encouraging and exciting to see a wonderful group come together every time I have an opportunity to come. I also want to recognize my mother-in-law specifically. So it's good to see you, Ma. Okay. I'll tell you, I want to start by challenging everyone. Get some of the brain cells stimulated a little bit here. And now, I don't want to go too far with the challenge here, but I'll tell you, it really happened to me the other day. I was driving to the airport. Now, this was in Eretz Yisrael. I was in Eretz Yisrael just recently, and I was going to the airport. And my flight was 5 a.m. All of us know what that means, these 5 a.m. flights. 1 in the morning is one thing. 5 a.m., imagine that one. Okay, so I was staying with actually my sister, who lives in an area a little bit unincorporated, I would call it like a yeshuv, small, quiet place. And compound that with being going to the airport at 2 in the morning. Okay, so you can imagine how much traffic there was or wasn't. So, of course, I didn't leave as early as I wanted to. And the first thing that happens as I'm leaving the yeshuv is I get this red light. Okay, I get a red light. So I'm on a side road heading to another side road. And there's a red light. I'm not kidding you, 2 in the morning, and you're going to the airport. So here's the challenge. What do you do? Now, go straight on red. They don't even have that in America, okay? Right turn on red, I don't know if they have it or not. Left turn on red, they don't have there either. I had to make a left turn. What do you do? First of all, you look around if there's any traffic. No traffic. Second, you see if the other time is, you know, blinking red. No blinking, don't walk. I'm going to be there for a long time. Third, you look for police, right? And now you have a moral and ethical decision to make, right? What do you do? Do you go to the light? Or, I'm sorry for anybody being shocked by that thought, but it crossed my mind, okay?
Is there a camera?
I looked for that too, okay? No camera. What do? You're going to the airport in the middle of the night and it's a rural area and it's got a red light. What do? So, I'll tell you what I did in a few minutes from now, okay? Not so fast. I'm going to compound it with one more thing. My 14-year-old daughter was with me. She's sitting in the seat there. So I got a chinuch problem beside, okay? Assuming I'm not bothered by the ethical and moral aspects of it, I do have a chinuch problem there. So that, I'll give you a little hint what I actually did or didn't do. But I, maybe you're thinking a little bit, what am I getting at already? Well, there is a whole area of public policy. Can government legislate how individuals should act in their own world when no one else is affected? Can they tell you how your family life should be? Can they tell you how to take care of your health? Can they tell you how to how many hours of sleep to get at night? Maybe can government legislate? I don't know if they can enforce it. That's another question. But thinking it through, is it right? Is it proper? Is it appropriate for government? And that's called public policy. And there's a lot of issues about such things. You know, even zoning laws come into that. You can imagine what comes into that. Sometimes it doesn't interfere with other people. Sometimes it. But bottom line is, you have to start thinking about what government can or cannot do. In America, a lot of people actually do work by the guideline. If I won't get caught, So obviously they don't mean it. If they can't enforce it and I won't get caught, obviously they don't really mean it. Usually in taxes area of taxes, a little more, you know, people will rationalize a little bit there also. But some people you actually use as a guideline. I don't know. You have to ask your consultants whether that's the actual really a legal way of measuring things. Obviously, I'm driving towards a point which is we should be stimulating these same brains, is establishing God as king and declaring him as king. That's the theme of Rosh Hashanah. When we blow the shofar, it's almost like coronating HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, I'll tell you a story that took place in Prague in the time of the Notary Yehuda. This is in the 1700s. The Notary Yehuda was the rabbi of the city. And there were tension between the Jews and the non-Jews. And the priests used to incite the people against the Jewish community. And the Notary Yehuda and the leaders of the community tried to keep things in check. So one year, the priest called together the bakers of the city. This is a true story. And he said, the bakers of the city here, we're all among ourselves here with the Christians. Now, they're all going to come in mass tomorrow to buy bread. Tomorrow's the last day. Today's the last day of Passover. Tomorrow they're coming to buy bread. Here's the plan. We're going to poison all the bread. It's going to be poisoned, and the Jews are going to come hungry and eager and unsuspecting, and they're going to come. So this was a plan in order to cause massive destruction and death among the Jewish community. There was a fellow in the non-Jewish community who at one time Notary Yehuda had done a favor for him, and this fellow felt very guilty when he heard about this plan, and he actually gave a heads up to the Notary Yehuda. He told him what was going to happen. Now, what can you do? I mean, to stop it, to outright, you know, confront it and say, nobody buy bread, we understand it's poisoned. I mean, it's a delicate situation because this fellow had told and he may get into trouble. It's life and death, either way you go. So he met with the Rabbanim and they declared the following, came up with a genius idea. They issued an announcement that a terrible mistake had taken place and that the calendar was mistaken, and they were one day off in when Pesach begins and ends. And today is not the last day of Pesach, tomorrow is the last day of Pesach. And they issued a declaration that an error had taken place, that Pesach had started the wrong day, no one's allowed to eat chametz an additional day. Now you tell that to thousands of people who are hungry and eager, who's fooling who, what's going on over here, it sounds funny, yes, no, we suspect them, we never heard of such a thing. Every Jewish person, without exception, was extremely loyal and obedient and receptive of this announcement by the rabbi of the city. And the next day, no one, not one person showed up to buy chametz or get it from his friend, from the bakery, no way in shape or form. The bread the next day was not touched by any Jew. And this way, things got shaken up and the plot was averted and the Jews were saved. It's a true story. Now I'm thinking to myself, people do get a hold of things that are questionable or illegal, you know, contraband and customs and whatever. But it comes to a Jewish person in his own home, on chametz, with chametz on Pesach, for example, no one would touch it. No one's looking, no one's asking, no one will ever know. It's such an aversion, because I'm not doing it because it doesn't taste good, I'm not doing it because other people will find out. A person, Jewish people, especially in this particular example, but it's an example which is actually typical. When the Melech says to a certain, and tells us a certain law, that law is golden. We're not doing it because we're doing it because the king said so. And no questions asked. And there's no question of anybody supervising it or monitoring it or policing it. That is when a person has an attitude, I'm here for the king and the king has issued it and that's why the rule is golden, then they won't question even if no one's going to ask or ever know the difference. And that's why these people had Yiras Shamayim. They had such a fear of God, obviously. When it comes to Chametz HaPesach, we all could understand that. It actually did the trick. Now, going back to the red lights for a moment here. If a person doesn't go through red lights because it's dangerous, because they may get hurt. I don't want to hurt anybody else either. I don't want to get in trouble. My insurance, I'm hurting people. I don't want to live with that. So, I'm not going to do it if it's busy. Number two, I don't want to get caught. Okay, if that's the reason, then if there's no risk or a person thinks there's no risk, again, we pass that particular, point in the road. But if the reason is because it's the right thing to do, because the government has said something which is important, and I respect not the law, but I respect the government, I respect society, then it's an integral part of what a person believes and feels. Then the person won't go through the lights, even in the middle of the light, which really happened to me. Well, I didn't go through it, actually. I'll tell you a joke about what happened now. If I wouldn't be telling you the story, if I did go through it, if I wouldn't be telling you the story. But, I did actually ask my daughter. I said, what should we do? And I challenged her with that. She probably knew I was coming. I was like, what's the question? A red light? What are you asking me? She's only 14, she doesn't drive yet. Then it happened about a half a mile later again. See, then I asked her again, what should we do? We didn't go through that one either, okay? So at least, but this gave me also a story for this afternoon to share with you. Not because the point is, well, first of all, anyway, you can't play games with such a thing. You can't demonstrate any compromise in front of your children, no matter what you feel, one way or another. And ultimately, you shouldn't do it anyway, but certainly not in front of the youth. Okay. Why didn't, why? It was taking longer than I wanted. Well, I love Eretz Yisrael. I wanted to be there longer. That's true. Any time that I have to wait is too long, you know. You never saw me drive, huh, Marty? Okay. I with this idea, I want to translate and share with you. Believe it or not, the first line of the first thing we say after we walk in shul in the morning. Adon Olam. It's on the first page, right after Matovu. You walk across the threshold into Shul. Adon Olam is the first thing. It's on the first page, right before Yigdal, right? And what's that first phrase? Le'eis nasa b'cheftzo kol azai melech shmo nikra. Now, usually you go by it so quickly, you're thinking of all the different tunes there are for Adon Olam at that point, right? All the different melodies. Okay, but it's a phrase. It actually means something. Let's translate that phrase. It's eye-opening. As la'ace, la'ace means the time. Time. Ace ratzon, right? The time of good things to happen. The time, okay. So, la'ace na'asa b'cheftzoko, which means at a moment when everything which Hashem wants is what we do, na'asa, we do, b'cheftzo, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, Hashem chafetz, l'man tzito, chafetz means what He wants. If it turns out that we do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, as I melech shmo nikra, then we're declaring Him as King. And this is the concept we just illustrated. That if we do things because we want to, or we feel when we want to conform, that's, we're the judge, not you, not the King. The King said so. Well, he said, let me think what I'm going to do. Then I'm the boss. I'm making the final decision. But if we do it, of course, because the King said so, I am just a servant, I'm to follow through, I'm just to facilitate what the King wants. I'm not even going to ask questions. The best worker is one who doesn't ask questions. I mean, he'll clarify things. But he said, you say do it, he doesn't say why. Right? That's the famous way they say. When the guy says jump, what should he say? How high. How high. That's right, he didn't say why. You know, what's going on here? What? Didn't ask questions. He says, yes sir, that's what he says. So if we are at the point, Nasa b'cheftzo kol, everything we do is according to the will of Hashem, then we have not said anything, not only about ourselves, but we've said what our relationship, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a melech. We're going to understand a little bit what the attitude is towards Rosh Hashanah. Now, here's another example I think about on occasion, I'll share with you. There's, I use sports sometimes as examples. On occasion they have drafts, an NBA draft, NFL draft, I don't know about baseball, if they have it, maybe they do. But let's go with the NBA, right? The basketball association, the basketball teams, all draft. Now, what are they drafting exactly? What is it coming up? It means the major teams have a list of college players. I think this is the way it goes, right? And they go over, their statistics, how well they did, and they're able to choose those who are eligible to join into the NBA. So there's a whole system of who gets picked first, second, third. There's a system of NBA draft, and they can trade. There's a whole system. But the bottom line is, for all these players across the country, right? All these countless college players are sitting at the edge of their seat, waiting to see if they're going to be drafted. Now there are a lot of teams out there and a lot of picks. But after everything's said and done, was it 100 picks? 70 picks? I don't know. It's not endless. And there are more players than that. So there's a fellow who was pretty good on his team in the middle of Nevada. I don't know, you know. And he's sitting as if now, if his name gets chosen by San Antonio to be in the NBA, he's a millionaire, right? That's what it is these days. And if he doesn't get picked, he's Joe Schmo. He wants to get picked by any team, certainly a good team. You know, and his record is on the line. He's being evaluated. And if he gets picked, he's in. If he's not, but oh, let's take ourselves to the living room with this guy, and he's going to get picked. Everybody knows. And when he does get picked, so they're quickly going to interview him, right? They're going to say, what do you think about that? You want to play for this team? So, generally speaking, I would expect, and I'm sure it's true, the response, of course, is going to say yes. That's what he's waiting for. That's what his whole life has been, you know, training to be the athlete, to be on a major team. His attitude is going to be, of course, oh, I'm so honored, it's a wonderful day. I would love to be part of their team. Now, so here's the question. Well, what are you going to ask for them? What are you going to demand of the team in order to make you happy? What's he going to say? He says, I'm not asking anything. I'm so happy. I'll work for that coach. He's known to be a good coach because he got that team up to second place, blah, blah, blah. You know, they got in the playoffs, and that particular coach, he works his guys hard. I'm going to be there and show I'm worth it. And he's going to say that I'm going to be a lead, I'm going to be a great player, and I'm going to be a team player. I'm going to go, you know, get early to practice. He's only talking about what he can do to make the team happy, to be part of the group, to make the coach happy, to make the owner happy, to show that he's worthy. He's not going to start demanding anything for himself at that point. That's not the attitude. It's such an honor to be picked and to be part of the team that all he wants to do is be part of the team. And not, he's not thinking of his own personal interest. Now, obviously, that's ultimately what the back of his mind, he wants to be on a good team because he wants to succeed and he wants to be, you know, rewarded for it. But at this point, he's declaring his allegiance and at that moment when it's an honor. Can you imagine he could be sitting there and a few hours later been left lonely? Nobody wants him. Then what? Please, 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 I'll do everything. I'll do everything. I'll